Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 160 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by co-host Steve, and we're going to recap a little bit of nerd news. We're going to begin in entertainment talk with the latest Emmy nominations and the Marvel Disney Plus shows. Netflix to begin some video gaming, a new console coming from Valve, and then we'll move over into tech news with an update to some ransomware hits, some White House executive orders affecting the tech space, a large data leak, Facebook's new policies regarding experts, and then a little bit of space and robot news. There is a lot to get to. Let's get started.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
All right, and welcome back to episode 160. And this is a pretty full week on a lot of news, a lot of hard-hitting tech news on the back end of the show here. So let's jump right into it and start with our entertainment section with the Emmy nominations. And the Emmy nominations have come out, and there's a notable amount getting thrown at these Disney Plus shows.
How do you feel? Is it well deserved? Like, I mean, they were good shows. I don't know.
Here's this is part of the interesting aspect of it. I think one, they're well deserved. The production level exceeds anything when you're talking about like costumes. You're talking about the special effects. All that stuff exceeds any other TV show out there. And then the acting between the two leads was
great,
phenomenal. Yeah. And the fact that WandaVision snuck themselves into, because they're only doing one season, they snuck themselves into a limited series instead of into a drama or anything else. So they're not competing against normal TV shows. They're competing against the one-off series out there.
Yeah, some other streaming services. It's TV's kind of changing right now. You know, like, a lot of these streaming services are soaking up almost all the nominations now. Network TV isn't really the heavy hitters on these Emmy lists now. And it's weird, too, because I don't know if they care, because all of them have their own streaming service now also. So it's not like they're pigeonholed into this, you know, commercial break, like long drawn out seasons. If they don't want to, they can put it straight to their streaming and have no commercials and let people binge it and everything like that. All these viewers want nowadays. I don't know. Like you said, yeah, the production level is very high. The acting from the main actors, cause they're not usually TV actors. They're straight from the movies, you know? So the acting was high quality. It's just weird to, I guess, get this kind of recognition because nobody's giving them awards for the fucking movies. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you know, like, so what separates the movies from the TV shows? Like, do we have a lower set of standards for what we give Emmys to than what we give Oscars to? Like, that's what kind of like puzzles me, is that, you know, in Infinity War, and even as much as I didn't like Endgame, the production and everything on Endgame was huge. You know, you don't get awards for like our nerd shows in the movies like we do in I guess, you know, television. I mean, shit,
yeah,
the fucking Lord of the Rings only got, you know, the last one is the only one that won anything.
Yeah, I think there is a different standard. I think whoever votes for the Oscars and everything else on the movie side is quite a bit more stuffy in that concept of what is cinema and really refusing. TV is really, you know, the Emmys and stuff like that has always kind of been a little more just whatever is current and whatever is, like, they haven't closed out categories like what the movie awards have. So for them to be more readily able to adapt to including The Mandalorian last year with significant nominations. The Mandalorian, again, this year has the most nominations at 24, tied with The Crown. And then WandaVision is second most with 23 nominations. Like, the Emmys and TV has been quicker to adapt to, you know, just general pop culture. What is got the biggest fanfare? Movies? Yeah. When we look at the Oscar list and stuff like that, it is never the popular movies. It's never what people actually pay to go see. It's what entertains them as cinema. So yeah, the movies that we like and our nerd movies, they've been frozen out of there. I think this is...
I don't necessarily disagree with that at times. You know, there are a lot of movies that do go unrecognized, in the awards ceremonies that possibly should at least have, you know, a nomination, an honorable mention. You know, I get that they look at film as a higher art form than television still, but I don't know how long that's going to last with the production level of television that we've had over the last decade of, you know, I mean, even if you want to go as far back as The Sopranos, you know, it seems like ever since then, TV has really just kind of like elevated its storytelling and its quality. And I think, you know, the Emmys has done a good job of recognizing that and not taking content into play as much as film has. You know, it seems like you can make the Citizen Kane of nerd movies and they still wouldn't give a shit because they don't care about the content. They have no respect for the content, to whereas it feels like the Emmys, their content matters, but it's not the end all be all. It's not going to be what kind of takes you out of the running based on whatever it is.
Yeah. Like I said, I've always been, I'm more likely to watch TV over movies. I think the content that's put out, especially now, is phenomenal. And like I said, I think that this is the future. This is the way we're going to see Emmy nominations and stuff going. I think Disney Plus is going to dominate right along with Netflix and everybody else, just because the quality of content they're putting out, not just in acting, not just in storytelling, but in just production value, is exactly kind of where today's entertainment needs to be. If you're going to have your own streaming service and everything else, is what they've got. And like I said, I still think the WandaVision getting 23 nominations, it doesn't surprise me, especially knowing that it's in the limited series category. While there have been some good limited series, I think they
tugged on the heartstrings all the people that vote for these awards.
Yeah, with all the
throwbacks and stuff to the classic TV. I really think they just tugged on the heartstrings of all these voters and just really kind of hit the nostalgia for them, and they benefited from it. You know,
yeah, but, and like I said, the limited series aspect of it, there are only so many things that qualify as limited series. The other heavy hitting ones that like people will know is like Mare of Easttown and The Queen's Gambit. But after that, they're just like, they're not competing against a bunch of people. So to get one of the five or six nominations in those categories for WandaVision, it's not a surprise that they got it across the board. Whereas like Falcon Winter Soldier, who got what, six nominations or five? And even though it was a great show, great production value, they were considered just a regular drama series. Way more competition, more to go up against there.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the Emmys are going to be interesting this year. I think we're going to try to do a Emmys specific show, just like we do at the Oscars the one year. A lot of good TV was this year. Seemed like COVID didn't really affect the TV series as much as it did the movies. So I think this year's Emmys is going to actually be a fun watch.
Yeah. So we'll definitely talk more about, Emmy nominations this week. We're just focused on really how well Marvel and Disney Plus kind of broke through here. Last year, we talked very much about how The Mandalorian broke through. This year, again, I've only briefly mentioned it, but Mandalorian crushed the nominations again this year. So we'll talk more about Emmys as it gets closer, a little more of a prediction or breakdown of some of these specifically nerd categories. But let's move into some other entertainment news here with Netflix beginning to offer video games on its streaming platform? Question mark. Yeah. Not sure really what they're going to do.
Nudge, nudge. I did read another article where some coding miner, you know, like guys that just mine code from all these platforms to try to get some early news and everything, did see that there was some PlayStation code written into the Netflix code. So a lot of rumors now are that it's going to be a kind of cloud gaming PlayStation version for Netflix, which could be interesting. I don't know. They're talking about giving you video games without raising your price. So anytime they want to give me more shit without costing me more money, I'm fucking down.
Yeah, and you know, they're just going to continue to find a way to maintain their market share, or maintain their subscription numbers, or increase it. You know, they're like exponential growth in subscribers has kind of plateaued out. While they are still growing, it's not the huge amount that they're seeing in the early years. And they're just trying to find a way to keep people and sign people up. It makes complete sense that they go into video games, although video game development, probably a bad idea. I think we've seen for the most part, right, when these other entertainment companies come in and they try to develop their own video games thinking, hey, this is easy, they fail miserably. Like Disney doesn't make their own video games anymore because they failed miserably, and Disney can do just about anything. Netflix is probably far better off, yeah, teaming up with PlayStation, teaming up with somebody, offering cloud gaming, and then licensing out their franchises. Even the article we read talked about, like, they own intellectual property, like Stranger Things and stuff like that, that somebody would love to make a video game from.
Yep.
And, like, license that out to other game developers, find a way to incorporate it into your streaming packages and subscriptions. Great idea. Just don't start making a Netflix game studio, because that will fail.
If the Stranger Things game is not an 8-bit side scroller, I'm not touching it. I'm not touching it. I want all the nostalgia. But yeah, it should be like, I have no qualms with it. Like, go ahead, roll it out. I'll give it a whirl. We'll see what it's all about. And like I said, as long as they're not talking about, yeah, we're going to give you video games and up your subscription price $5 and you don't have a way to opt out and this and that, like, I'm fine with it. They're already maxing the amount of monthly they're going to get out of me. So I'm only going to roll it back from this point on.
Yeah, so it's interesting. They've hired a new vice president of game development. They're obviously moving in this direction, looking at probably in the next year to incorporate some aspects. So we'll feature whatever that news is going forward here. And then let's pick up with a little more video game news before we get out of entertainment. And that's the Valve Steam Deck handheld console was announced this last week, looking at, $400 price point, similar in the price point as like a Nintendo Switch. Kind of looks like a Nintendo Switch. kind of the same concept of a large screen handheld that you can dock and still play on your TV. Just has access to all of Steam games.
Yeah. Do you think they dropped the ball a little bit? Because, I mean, Nintendo just released last week that they had another Switch coming out with an OLED screen. You know, their screen is only 1280 by 800. But they're going to get a little bit more function out of it. They say it's going to function just like a PC also. So it's going to have a little bit more benefits. It's just funny that, like, I've seen a few memes, like all these PC gamers are like, PCs are better than console, PCs better than console, and then PC console. So does the PC gamer reject this, or do they do the mental gymnastics that they have to do to justify buying a console made by a PC?
I think both. I mean, I think they're going to reject it in the sense that it's still not going to replace playing the PC. But at the same point, they can have access to their game library that they're used to buying through Valve, and they can bring it on the go when they're jumping on a plane or doing whatever. So it's like, I think there are going to be PC gamers that are going to adopt it. They're going to say that this does not replace their PC dominance and superiority above all. But it gives them some flexibility to some of these games that, you don't need a full keyboard. You don't need the competition level computer. Maybe I just want to play my silly little $5 games that I bought, and I want to bring them along with me when I go on the train.
But it's funny because they never say that about a console. You know what I mean? The PS5 and the Xbox are $100 more than what this thing will cost. And nobody in the PC world ever says, well, it's just going to be secondary to my PC. PC still rules all, but it's just nice to have this console hooked up to my TV when I just want to sit on my couch and play some exclusive games that I can't play on my PC. No PC gamer has said that ever.
Right. But I think...
why would this be any different?
But I think that's why this is smart in the way that Valve is doing it this time, is they didn't make a traditional console. They made a portable console. So they are appealing to that more Nintendo
Switch. It does dock portable like the Switch. It does.
But the docking like a Switch is just to get people like me and you who don't care about the PC aspect some way to play on a big screen TV still. their appeal to the PC gamers is this doesn't replace your PC. It's just a companion to your PC. It is a way for you to maintain your still full game library, your game progress, your everything else. Just take it on the go if you really need to.
And sounds a lot like Xbox. Sounds a lot like Xbox.
No, but I can't. But I don't have a handheld Xbox.
You got, if you got a laptop, yeah, you do.
Yeah, but that's not handheld, right? That's different. I'm not busting out my laptop and controller on a plane. I'm
you just can not play. Doing you it. Can play your Xbox games on your fucking phone.
It lacks the portability. I can, right?
I'm just saying.
You're right. Just because I can doesn't mean anybody really is.
Okay.
There's a reason why the Nintendo Switch is popular.
Why
too,
isn't
right?
that going to apply to this Valve thing? Just because I can doesn't mean anybody is.
I actually think that this Valve Steam Deck here is probably going to be successful.
I think it's going to be successful.
Valve's other
failures.
Just
despite the consoles, I think the PC gamers are going to buy the shit out of it just so they don't have a flop. You know,
I think it has a good niche. I think it has a good concept on how it complements what systems are already out there. And
yeah, I'm not knocking the hardware at all. Like I see a need for it. I can see why a PC gamer or even a console gamer that just wants to get into some Steam games or whatever, or be able to play with their PC friends, you know, I see people buying it. You know, I just think that every excuse that makes a PC gamer shit on consoles goes out the window the day you fucking buy this. Shut your fucking mouth. I don't want to hear your bullshit anymore. You're a console gamer. Eat a dick.
Yeah, I understand the reluctance to in any way give credit to PC gamers and to incorporate them into to anything else. It's just like I said, I'm good with it. I think this is solid. I do think they probably are a little pissed off about the Switch OLED being announced. It does make their console day one inferior as far as like quality, yeah, build quality,
yep,
to what's currently out there, which would they probably, I'm sure when they built it with the Switch in mind, you know, with the Switch capability and concept in mind, just thinking, hey, we're going to make a Switch, but with our weird little trackpad system as a part of our controller, and then open it up to the full Valve suite. And then, hey, we're going to put like things that people want on their like internet browsers and like regular, yep, PC components.
Yep.
And, you know, that is an upgrade to Switch and some of the limited capabilities.
The day I bought a Switch and I was like, where's the Netflix app? And I, yeah, was just like, I was like, what? Like, I can't stream Netflix on my Switch? Like, that was like one of the big things that I was shocked at when I bought one. Like, I just assumed, just like every other console and every other thing, that like, oh, cool, I'll be able to take my Switch on the road. I could watch some Netflix on it. I could do this and that. And it's like, nah, bro, Mario is what you get, son. That's what you get.
Yeah, so I think I think there's a great use for this thing. So regardless of the PC gamer versus console gamer war and all of that, this has a purpose for both PC gamers and console gamers, which means that I think they hit the right market. I think this has the potential to actually be a functioning and profitable endeavor for Valve if it rolls out well and if it's you know, actually functions as it's supposed to.
Yeah, I totally see it as net positive. But if you're a PC gamer and you buy one, don't at me, motherfucker, because I'm gonna come at you.
All right, let's get out of entertainment. Let's go do some tech segments here. And there's a lot going on in tech this week. Let's begin with a quick throwback to something we've been talking about the last couple weeks. And so Our Evil is the hacking group that was attributed with that Cas8 ransomware attack that affected millions of devices. There was news that came out this last week that says that Our Evil company on the dark web seems to have just disappeared. It seems that all of their sites that they operated and all of the things have been shut down. They're no longer showing as an option out there.
Yeah, and I'm not too quick to give the government credit on this or anybody. Like, I know that the government is kind of like reporting on it, and I don't know if they're fully taking credit for it, but I just kind of like, man, when you're a hacker and you get this much kind of publicity, you burn it all down and you start it over again. Like, if you don't want to get caught, you burn it all down and you just start from scratch somewhere else.
Yeah, and it could go either way, right? Yeah, I guess it could be them shutting down their things and going.
Well, it's just like anytime anything blows up, Al-Qaeda takes credit for it, right? Like, you know, anytime something blows up, Al-Qaeda's just like, yep, we did it. We did it. And it comes out like a week later, like, no, Al-Qaeda didn't do it. Like, it was somebody else. Like, I think this is one of those situations where they possibly shut it all down and the government's like, see, we're doing our job. We're doing our job. We got them. and like, nope, they just burned it all down because, yeah, they're getting a lot of press and publicity. And it was only a matter of time before somebody, you know, somebody got. So,
yeah,
I don't know who to believe on this.
It does come, you know, just shortly behind a bunch of press conferences from the White House talking about ransomware attacks, talking about cybersecurity, talking about improving and increasing cyber capabilities by the government, including even being able to do offensive cyber and attack back. You know, really, that's the next story we have to talk about, which kind of covers, you know, maybe the government's responsible for this, maybe they're not. But it does go along with the fact that, you know, the White House is announcing having a ransomware task force and focusing on improving cyber defense, both in the corporate level and the military level, but then also improving cyber attack capabilities, offensive capabilities to attack back or hack back. He was, you know, President Biden was specifically asked if we would hack these companies back and conduct cyber offensive cyber attacks back at these companies. And he just gave the one word answer. Yes, like we absolutely will. This is something that will authorize. So maybe it's a part of this whole new concept of taking this more seriously, having an actual ransomware task force with some significant experts leading this and being behind it. You know, the government's even offering a $10 million reward for any help in identifying perpetrators of ransomware attacks. So there's obviously money and effort being put into the government taking this stuff seriously, which is really what we've been asking for a long time. Like, I don't care politically who believes at what side or whatever else. In the end, no matter who's in the office, you have to take this seriously. Like, you have to just recognize that we are behind. We are the number one target of the world, and we probably need to do something about it.
Yeah, it's almost like somebody might have listened to the show. We went on a big rant on how our government does not have a division specifically to fight these ransomware attacks, and turns out that ball might have been in the works, you know. So some good news coming out of the government, I guess. You know, like I can't say that I'm upset about it. Good, make a task force, hack back, do all the things that it says it's going to do. Again, my faith in execution is quite low in government, so we'll see how this plans out. But it's good to see that they're recognizing our weaknesses and what you know, holes we need to fill in our society. So hopefully they do a good job at it, and a lot of this stuff kind of works its way out. But yeah, I'm for it. You know, start take my tax dollars and protect our data.
Yeah, I that's exactly really where I'm at. If my tax dollars going to go somewhere, yes, let's appoint. You know, we've appointed a new head of. Was it? It's the first ever national cyber director. So we always had, or not always, but we've recently had CISA. And now we've got CISA as a separate arm. And we have a national cyber director completely focused on defensive cyber efforts for the White House. So at least we're appointing people. We're creating positions. We're breaking away from the old model of doing things.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see it go even further than just a task force. Even, you know, like I would like to see some kind of even like branch of the military that just focuses on tech. I mean, we got a whole branch of the military that focuses on space, and really ain't shit going on up there. Like, like I would not have a problem with a bunch of dudes in uniforms that just sit at computers all goddamn day and protect the internet. Like, the internet is a way more populated space than outer space. So, and we have an entire military branch dedicated to outer space. So if we want to take a section of the Air Force and create a subsection of the Air Force that deals with protecting just the fucking internet, I am totally down with that. I am so down with that. It's not even funny.
All right. Well, I'm going to disagree with that, but not on a fundamental reason why that we don't need it, but on we probably just don't need another service. Like, let's there's a way to figure this out without creating an entire new beast of a service. We've got enough. So let's but definitely focusing effort somewhere. All for it. Let's make sure that the right resources are going there. At least we're moving in the right direction as far as taking it seriously and recognizing the potential impact on our infrastructure, recognizing the impact on the corporations and kind of the faith in our market being tied to cybersecurity.
I'm just worried that they're going to create this task force. They're going to open up that box of bullshit that they're going to have to deal with, and somebody's going to look at somebody and just say, we're going to need a bigger boat. Like, that's all I'm fearing.
I mean, 100%. Whoever is in that seat right now that was appointed as the head of this defensive cyber task force is already saying, oh, we need more resources. Like, that's... whether that's just, everybody wants more money and more resources, or it's an actual need. But of course they need a bigger boat for both the figurative and the literal. They probably just want more money and to buy a bigger boat. But let's move on. We've got some more announcements coming out of the White House. A lot of news
coming out of the White House.
And we got an executive order that's vague right now. Who knows how it's going to implement? But it's an executive order about the right to repair, and Biden talking about the need to repair certain things. He specifically, like in his press address about this, talked about like tractors, which new to me. I don't work around farms very often, but apparently like even like everybody, everybody's making all of their equipment with very specific intellectual property that makes it impossible to repair. And I guess even like John Deere has made it to where like their tractors are completely like voided out if you try to repair them, if you try to fix them. And you can only have John Deere come out and fix your tractors nowadays because of all the computer chips and intellectual property. And it's actually caused a big problem for the farming industry. So Biden talks specifically about that. What we hope is that this executive order also extends to the right to repair that like us regular tech nerds care about. And that's our cell phones, our consoles, all these other things that are out there.
This is right up our friend of the show, Cory Doctorow's alley. We talked about this in our Cantina conversation. He wrote an entire story about it in his last book. Like, this is very important. And I hope he's sitting on his high horse right now going, I told y'all so. Because this was one of the things that he wrote about in that book that we talked is that, when everything is copyrighted and trademarked and this and that, you're limited to what you can use your products for, if you can fix your products. And it just kind of pigeonholes you into this consumer base that you lose a lot of your freedoms. Like what happens to the tractor mechanic in your town the day that you can no longer fix your own tractor?
Yeah, and that's really where things have gone. And not to mention, it also applies in like the military sector. The military lost their ability to repair a lot of the equipment that they're buying from these companies. They're not able to train their technicians to repair things at the same level that we once did. That causes potential problems in a large scale.
And you realize that's the only reason why this got really done. It has nothing to do with consumers. The military just got tired of being raped on repairs by the people that they made rich and gave their contracts to in the first place. So, like, how we trained how many Air Force members into mechanics for these planes, and then all of a sudden we got 5,000, 10,000. Air Force mechanics that can't even work on the planes we're buying from these motherfuckers. Like, that's pretty much the reason why this went down. Does it trickle down to us consumers? Hopefully so. Yeah. All right, cool. But let's not give the government so much credit as they were looking out for us as much as they were looking out for themselves.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, we could be skeptical on the political side and just say, yeah, they're protecting their defense interests, and they're pandering to farmers and the people that are a little red.
Government gonna be government.
But you could be a skeptic, or you could just say at least something has happened. Like, right to repair has been something that over the last decade has emerged as like a very serious topic in the tech space, because starting at 10 years ago, you could see the writing on the wall.
Yeah,
that
I mean,
everything was moving. Your cars, every single thing was moving to very specific intellectual property that was being locked into service contracts and everything else because there was no way to get it fixed otherwise, or everything was becoming almost like a consumable, like your cell phone is a consumable that you just throw away every 2 years because you can't get it fixed. It costs more money to get it fixed than it does to just buy a new one.
I will take collateral benefits over no benefits, but I would prefer targeted benefits. Like how...
You're just not that important. The farmers.
I only help fund this entire fucking government. It's fine.
Barely.
I only wrote a 5-number check to the fucking feds this year. It's no big deal.
You're not important enough. Let's be serious. So ultimately, yes, I think this is a great opportunity for this to turn into something that can be beneficial. Hopefully, the new chair of the FTC. I cannot remember her name. She's very young.
I did just see an article about her.
Very young and very tech-centered. So this is going to fall into the FTC's lap on how they write this right to how they execute this executive order here on right to repair. And she hates these tech companies. Like if you haven't seen, right now, like Facebook, Amazon, Apple, everybody is trying to get her thrown off of every single case as a conflict of interest because she is at some point in time in her young career, because she's, I think, like 32 or she's young. Like in her young career, she has pretty much gone against, written op-eds, done papers against every one of these companies. So they're all saying that she's too biased against them and trying to get her thrown off of every case that impacts them. So she clearly has no love for these big tech companies that are going to be affected in our world, the nerd world of right to repair. And, is she going to have the weight of the White House? Is she going to have the necessary resources to really enforce and to have effective change in this world? Maybe. Or maybe not. Maybe this is going to be an executive order that's going to have little weight behind it.
Yeah, we'll see where it's going. Like, it's going to be interesting. Like, I can see everybody positioning for a big kind of, like, duke out coming up soon. So, I don't know, man. We'll see where this leads. We'll be here to report on it.
All right. Well, I guess that's the good for the current administration. I guess we can talk about some of the weird and
yeah, I'm about to get mad
and bad here. And that's this last week. We get into press conferences coming from the White House, and they're looking at. The headline here for this article is that, Biden's allies want phone carriers to vet anti-vax messages, as well as like social media companies to vet anti-vax messages and to delete them out, or to in some way kind of rein in these things, specifically when he mentions like the phone companies. This gets everybody
going here. So a little disclaimer, we are not taking a position on the vaccine right now. This has little to do with the vaccine, although it's going to feel kind of like it's about the vaccine. It's more about the government feeling they have a right to control what you talk about on your goddamn text messages. If you don't think this is fucked up, I don't care if you're running around town shooting vaccines in people's shoulders because you believe it so much. If you don't think this is fucked up, you are part of the problem.
Yeah, so this is, first I want to just to play fairness here. They're not necessarily talking about individual personalized conversations, although you could always be skeptical and say, they open up that door, then it's, hey, grandma sending some anti-vax text message to her grandson all of a sudden gets kind of caught up by this. But ultimately, they're trying to target these text message campaigns in the sense that like there are companies out there that get your get your phone number or whatever else, and then they just blast you with text messages. So we're talking about ones that send out thousands of text messages that say, specifically in here that talks about like there was a text message that was sent out to tens of thousands of people that said, Biden is sending goons door to door to force you to take the COVID-19 vaccine, sign our petition, right? Like that's the one that they're trying to target.
But they don't give a fuck about the tens of millions of robocalls that I get on my goddamn phone.
That's my biggest complaint about the Amazon
package that got delivered that got lost to click this fucking link. My business line gets blown the fuck up constantly with bullshit text messages and bullshit calls. Nobody gives a fuck. But the minute it says vaccine in it, now we got to fucking do something. Now's the fucking problem.
That is really, when I looked at this, I was thinking that exact concept was, I mean, I have almost nothing come to my phone that is legitimate nowadays. I don't have friends. I don't have friends. I don't do things. So almost every phone call I get is fake, and almost every text message I get is fake. That, like, yes, there are definitely things that we probably want the government to somewhat help and regulate and benefit consumers. This one, like, you're reaching here. Like, this can't be your top and only priority right now.
And, like, I don't even want them to be the ones to stop that. Like, I don't want their hands and fingers into the phone companies to do it. Pass a law that says if you're sending these text messages, we're going to come after you. You're going to get fined and you're going to get arrested and you're going to, like, make a series of consequences because those, you know, who owns these phone lines and who's sending them should be somewhat easily traceable, you know, so just make consequences for it. Don't dip your fucking toes into the SMS market and be the one to put that firewall up, because yeah, once you give the government that kind of power, they're not ever going to give it up, and they're going to use it for all kinds of fucking bullshit.
Yeah. So that's, I think this got picked up very much on the news about, you know, them screening and checking everybody's text messages for anti-vax things. I don't believe that's the intent, nor do I think the government even has that level of scope to do so. I think it's more about targeting telemarketers. But
they're already going after Facebook and all these platforms for misinformation. Like, this, they're on this big misinformation campaign over the last week. And, you know, I don't know if you watched it, the press conference, but I can't remember which reporter, but he tore in to to the press secretary about, like, what do you call misinformation? Fauci was telling us not to wear masks 2 weeks into the pandemic. Was he providing misinformation? Does the government need to take responsibility for their end on the misinformation? I was like, and then you guys were taking down posts of people saying that the virus was probably man-made in Wuhan, and the government was literally blocking those posts. Facebook was blocking those posts for months and months. Now it turns out that even Biden himself says, yeah, no, it could quite possibly have came from a lab. So what you were saying was misinformation a year ago is not misinformation now. And what you were saying a year ago was misinformation compared to what it is now. So what the fuck gives the government the right to decide what is even misinformation? Like, it's just so fucked up. This is so fucked up.
It's an ugly situation. It's why the government should probably just stay out of it, right? Like, that's generally the what should happen in these cases, is the government needs to just remain out of our conversations with these kind of topics. And
yeah, like the government's job is not censorship. It's if anything, is to educate, right? Like, if you have a highly educated society, misinformation dies off on its own, you know, so why not just spend your time and money to make a highly, you know, a higher educated society, rather than, like, no, we're just going to make sure that you dummies are spoon fed what we want you to see.
Yeah, I disagree with a little bit of your concept there, that it's that easy to have a highly educated.
Oh, I didn't say it was easy. Did I say the word easy? I never said the word easy.
And then misinformation disappears, because as we're seeing today, this highly educated society, the most educated society.
What highly educated society? You talking about us?
Yeah, we
are. Like, motherfucker, I know you ain't talking about us.
we're as highly educated as any society ever. And misinformation is, it's rampant. And the tools, I get it. Like, if you're the government, the tools of misinformation are something to overcome. And I also get it. If you're the government, you feel that you have the power to just squash it. Even regardless. And that's the big issue, is squashing that information. That's violating other rights. That's violating other concepts. And
but in the last year, what the government has proven beyond doubt is that they have no fucking clue what misinformation is. They have no fucking clue. They've provided misinformation and they have squashed actual information in the quest to hide misinformation. So you're already 0 for 2 in my book. Like, you're already 0 for 2. What fucking makes you think you have the right to keep going forward?
Well, we'll see where it goes from here. I don't think they're going to, you know, whatever they were talking about in the press conference, it's not going to equal any kind of action, in my opinion. I don't think they're going to be able to compel, you know, the cell phone providers or phone companies to stop allowing these messages to go out or whatever else. I think ultimately they're saying things that are never going to be put into play. Although we do know that, like, they've admitted to the fact that they are scanning Facebook groups. They are surveilling and watching.
That leads us to one of the next stories on the outline. Like, we'll flip these two real quick and go into. So their answer right now is to deem group admins on Facebook experts. Like, if you run a Facebook vaccine group and you're the group admin and you're the one that is promoting vaccines and this and that, Facebook's going to give you a little option to where you can put a little expert tag on your avatar and your nameplate. So now, like, this concept to me is just so stupid. This is just so stupid. Like, now some random dipshit that created a Facebook group that is just spouting the same shit the government wants you to hear can now be considered an expert. And once they put that expert like logo on their name, there's going to be millions of Karens that don't know. Like, this dude could have a kindergarten education for all you fucking know, but he's got the word expert next to his name. So fucking, you know, Susan's just going to take that nameplate for what it is and be like, no, this, I saw it on the internet. It's 100% true. The dude was an expert.
Yeah. I do hate this concept of just being able to, like, self-identify as an expert. I think Facebook's in, like, a no-win situation here. Like, they are completely screwed no matter what direction they go, right? If they go towards blocking content based off of what is pretty well disputed as, you know, as false information, then everybody loses their shit.
Like,
right?
Yeah, like, the flat earther groups disappear. I'm not mad, okay? Like, yeah, I'm not mad.
Like, the problem is we don't live in a world that's the only group disappearing, right? So, and so what we see is, like, Facebook, if they censor any of that stuff, then they're being accused of, you know, being Big Brother and obligating speech and violating people's rights and blah blah blah, right? The same argument that we've had in the past. And then if they do nothing, right? If they do nothing with the current direction that the government's heading, the government's going to hold them liable for the bad information and the things that are taking place. So now they're just trying to go, like, hey, we're Wikipedia. We really don't give a shit anymore. Yeah, people can put whatever they want. We're going the way of Wikipedia. Anybody can log in, create an account, put whatever they want. And as long as they say that they did some research, as long as they say that they were experts, we're going to just take them at their word.
And I'm not going to lie. We got a 1,000 member group on Facebook. You want to? They give me the option to make myself a nerd expert. I'm taking it.
No, yeah, for sure.
I'm fucking taking it.
For sure.
Call me expert. Listen to my words.
And that's why it's like, I think on the surface, this sounds messed up. I think in actuality, what it does is just gives greater control for you to moderate your own group. And if you found your way into a group, you're probably good with whatever information that they're certifying as experts anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, it furthers the echo chambers that most of us live in, that in our groups, we can have our own experts that can say their own version of facts and truth or whatever else. But I guess I just don't know.
How hard is it to get verified on Twitter? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how hard is it to get verified on Twitter? How hard is it to get verified on Instagram? And now Facebook is just going to be like, fuck it, bro. Like, you run the group, use verified expert. Like, yeah, but
to verify somebody on Twitter just verifies an identity. It doesn't verify your credentials.
It somewhat does. I'm pretty sure it does.
That's why people look at blue checks as like an actual authoritative thing. But no, it just means you have a certain amount of followers and that they verify that you are the real person associated, that all those followers aren't following some fake person. Right, like, and that's what it comes down to. So, but it doesn't verify that that person has a PhD and is a top credentialed person in their field.
Yeah, I guess. Like, but it'd be really easy to double check that. Like, once you realize that, like, this person is a real person, the check mark, you know, guarantees that they are a real person. And then it's a Google away for, you know, or a quick vetting. It makes vetting a little bit quicker, to whereas I could just make up a complete alias with a bunch of bullshit. And, you know, if you don't have a check mark, then it kind of takes it away from it a little bit. Like, you kind of are a little more skeptical without that blue mark.
I don't know. Like I said, I don't know what I would do differently in this case if I was Facebook. Like, this, to me, this is them just trying to appease everybody. No, for our users, we don't want to censor their speech. We don't want to have that stain put on us. And government, we also don't want the liability. So we're gonna make you say that, like, no, it's not my fault. It's that expert's fault on why people are saying bogus shit on the internet.
I just, this whole like subject is just really fucked up, because a government that has been lying to the people for decades is the, like, the truth police. It just makes no fucking sense. A government that has been proven time and time again to just be blatantly lying and deceiving the American people is going to get on their high horse and try to be the truth police. It's just such a fucked up concept.
I agree. But like I said, just tell me how you do it better, I guess. That's the real challenge here, and what we're kind of moving
when it
towards.
When it comes to vaccines, if you don't want to get it, don't get it. And if you die, so what? Bye-bye. Sorry about it. Like sometimes you just got to wash your hands of it. Let Darwinism take its role. Like, we did our best. We provided a vaccine. We put out all the education. If you want to believe these people over here and risk your life by believing them, then that's on you. And if you get COVID and die, then that's on you too. And we're not going to fucking feel bad about it. I know that sounds savage, but to me, it really doesn't. People have to take personal ownership of their choices. And the information is out there. The misinformation is out there either. It's on you to become an educated person, a skeptical person, and do your due diligence and make good life choices. I'm tired of people being able to take important life choices and absolve themselves of them and put them on other people. No, it's on you, Karen. It's on you.
All right. I'm done with vaccine talk. Let's let's keep this thing moving. Let's go with, I guess we can just talk a little bit about this Apple story here. And yeah. So Apple has accepted a new request from Amazon to get rid of FakeSpot. I don't know if you've heard of FakeSpot. I've used FakeSpot, not as an app, but I've used it. I've gone to that website to check Amazon reviews. FakeSpot is a company that scrapes Amazon reviews. You drop in a URL or a product or whatever else, it'll scrape the Amazon reviews, and based off of like what kind of broken English the reviews are using and how quickly the reviews came out and how many are verified purchases and all that stuff, it'll tell you the reliability of that review score. So it'll tell you, like, oh, okay, it really is, it's showing it's a 4.5. It's really a 2-star review, like if you average out the ones that are verified purchasers. So FakeSpot does that. Amazon has said that it's a privacy issue, it's a legal issue, and has asked Apple to take down FakeSpot from the App Store, in which Apple obliged. It's always good when we see the big four working together.
Yeah, like I don't know why Apple caves to this. Like, what do they care?
The reason why Apple caved to it, in my opinion, is that Amazon made a case that FakeSpot was violating terms of Apple's App Store policies, and I think that that's how they won. So Amazon has their whole legal team and everything else, and they dug into the practices that FakeSpot is doing and the privacy features that FakeSpot had implemented, and it violates some of Apple's policy. And all really Amazon probably had to do was just say, here's your policy, here's how they violate it, take them down until they fix it, which effectively shuts them down. And I would bet that that's Amazon's crackpot, you know, billion-dollar legal team. That's how they did this.
Yeah. It's just so fucked up to see somebody out there trying to provide a service to protect consumers and have two tech giants and consumer giants just, like, Because you do you think Apple pushed back on them? No, you think Apple's going to change their terms of service so that a fake spot could actually thrive on their platform? No, probably not. You know, so we're just back to square one because people got better lawyers.
Well, you can still go to the fake spot website if you're on Amazon and just copy and paste the URL for the product that you're looking at. If you're looking at some sketchy product that only has, you know, has
who does anything from their desktop anymore?
Like, this guy.
70% of all internet traffic is on a phone.
This guy does. So but yeah, and then I think it's time to move over into a quick little space news. Let's go with Hubble Space Telescope. We've talked about it a bunch of times over the last couple of weeks since it's been shut down, and it's back, baby.
Fuck me, man. Fuck me. I feel like that little kid. I feel like the family VCR broke, and I finally thought we were going to get a Blu-ray player, and then Dad fixed the fucking VCR. Now I'm just like, shit.
Yeah, right to repair. Right to repair. Fix that shit.
God damn it. So we were so close to getting a new Blu-ray player. We're back to VHSs. God damn it.
For those of you who didn't listen last week, Steve was a very big proponent of not attempting this this switching over to the backup systems or whatever else, which could have resulted in like catastrophic failure. And he was fully against even trying to fix this thing at all. Just let it become space junk and put up a new Hubble telescope that's not from the early 1980s, late 70s. Yeah, I think they started building in the 70s. I think it's been flying since the 80s. But yeah, so Steve's been a big proponent of just letting it die. And here we are. Hubble telescope still going.
Still back in action. Like, yeah,
back in action on some backup computers from the 1970s.
Touche, NASA. Touche. I'll give it to him, man. I still want the Blu-ray player, though. I'm not going to lie. I still want it.
Hopefully, there's somebody building that Blu-ray player in the background. But Hubble's back. Let's get some cool images. I just want to see the first picture taken by Hubble right now. Let's get that those beamed back down to us.
Yeah, just think about the progression cell phone cameras have made in like the last 5 years. Okay, seriously, like, what are we talking about here? Like, man, like the Hubble's got like a megapixel, like compared to what we got now. Like we're taking pictures of planets and making like all kinds of physics calculations off of a megapixel. Like, we got phones that are. I just don't get it, man. I don't get it.
Because it's still doing a phenomenal job. So yeah, let's see in the future. I'm sure that there are other telescopes in the works that will be able to compete. Especially, you know, we're talking about the more and more the space interference when we talk about like Starlink and stuff like that, interfering with astronomy and interfering with like land based telescopes, and that the night sky is changing. I'm sure that there are way more plans to get actual orbited telescopes out there, but we need Hubble now. And I'm glad they
shooting
fixed it.
Like 60 satellites a month up in the air. Like, could we just put a camera in one of the, like, yeah, I'm sure Elon would be happy shooting 59 so that we could put a fucking a new camera up in that motherfucker with one and send it on its way.
If you think Elon doesn't already have cameras installed on all these satellites you're fucked up. Elon's definitely got toys on every one of these satellites.
Oh, for sure.
But and then not on our little outline here, but just a quick reminder: Jeff Bezos is going to space this week.
Yeah,
we get to talk about it. We get to talk about it next week.
He's going salty as hell too.
Did you see that the $28 million bidder, the guy who won the seat in auction, he's no longer gonna go fly. He's got something better to do.
Yeah,
and he's got
out.
Some 18-year-old kid now going in his place.
Yeah, did he just gift his spot or did he sell it secondarily? Like, I don't know the details of that story.
I think it's a son or something. It's some 18-year-old kid who comes from a lot of money.
I did see a story where Ashton Kutcher actually bought a seat on the rocket and then backed out because I think Mila Kunis got in his shit.
Are you kidding me?
Like, she I guess she snapped off. He put out an official press conference that said that it's not the right choice for his family at the moment. Like, it's still oh, yeah. Part of his goals, but at this moment, it's not, you know, good for his family. Like, is there going to be a time where you don't have kids and it will be practical? Like, is there a certain life insurance, like,
I was gonna say,
number that you need to know? Like,
yeah, it just comes down to making sure that you're insured when you go to space. And then whatever. You do it. You die, we make millions.
But I'm willing to bet, like, yeah, he brought that up at dinner one day and she was like, "You're gonna do what?"
Yeah, that's funny.
Not gonna happen, Ashton. Not gonna happen.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll talk about that next week. If from everything I've seen, the launch is still a go. So we'll talk about that next week. And then last quick little fun story is apparently in Paris there's a pizza shop now fully operated by a bunch of robots churning out 80 pizzas an hour.
Man, you know it's coming. It, like, I see how they make pizzas at my Little Caesars, local Little Caesars.
They're robots.
Easily replaced by robots. You are so easily replaced by robots. Yeah,
there's no independent thought going on there.
You're so easily replaced by robots.
Did you watch the video of this pizza robot?
Yeah, I saw it, man.
I mean, like, it's impressive.
I'm not gonna lie.
It's doing everything smooth in uniform and pretty perfectly put together pizzas, slotting them in the oven, taking them out at the right time, and then putting them in little automated boxes that you unlock with your app to go claim your pizza. Like, 100% automated from the order process to the pickup process, not a human involved. And the most interesting part is, you don't even get to save a dollar on it. Like, they're still charging normal pizza prices for this. There's no human involved in this. But there's also no cost savings to the consumer. So, well done, company.
Yeah, it's sad because as we saw COVID ramped up the work from home, there was a big push to do more work from home. To begin with, a lot of studies were coming out and people were always sharing these studies and there was more work from home opportunities. COVID just ramped that up, you know, and now you got a lot of people that are telling companies, "I'm not coming back. You've survived over the last year with me working from home and you can survive if I stay working from home. So figure it out." With the $15 an hour minimum wage push, boy, you're going to see a lot of this. You're going to see a lot of stories like this. Like, not that I don't feel that a minimum wage should not be raised. I'm not going to get into those details, but I'm letting y'all know right now, you keep pushing that beast really hard, this is going to be the fallout of that. You may get a couple years of what you want, but eventually robot's going to take your job. Like, it's going to be one. So maybe think about pushing for vocational schools, you know, trade programs. I think in order to make a more sustainable society where people can earn a decent wage to take advantage of the American dream, I think we need to pivot. I think we need to pivot on some things, because robots be flipping pizzas, they're gonna be flipping burgers, they're gonna be doing all of that stuff, and the jobs that you're fighting for are gonna go away. They're just gonna go.
I don't know why I thought that we could just put that story at the end, have a little lighthearted robot talk. joke about fucking robots flipping pizzas and spinning pizza dough and stuff like that, and then get out of here on a nice note. But
nope.
that's my fault, team.
Nope.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Should have ended with Hubble, bro.
But yeah, that's a week in news there. And as always, join us over in the community over at thenerdcantina.com/community and compete to become an expert, as we'll just be handing those things out to any nerd that wants it. And
oh man. Yeah, don't give me that power. Don't give me that power.
You want to put a nerd expert on your resume? Join us over at the Nerd Cantina on Facebook. We got you. Yeah. And share this episode with somebody. Let somebody else listen to us for once. And we'll talk to you next week, nerds.
See ya.